Outstanding. You can't have an immigration lawyer without having an immigration song. My pal, from our old days at that Michigan State Law School, maybe one of the best immigration lawyers in the country, certainly one of the best people I've ever met. Welcome to the Big 550 KTRS in St. Louis, Reggie Passis.
Hey, Scott, how you doing?
I'm doing terrific. Hey,
you are
Reggie.
Too kind.
Thank you for joining us. I know you are on a little bit of borrowed time, but.
Yep, no problem.
I know that you have dedicated your career to immigration law. And in this particular campaign season, we have heard a lot of talk about immigration. And we haven't heard a lot of law, or really, to me, a lot of logic.
Right.
So can you pick out of what has been going on in the political world, in particular Donald Trump's world, and tell us something about immigration law that we should understand that's important for listeners and lay people to understand?
Sure, sure. Well, I mean, I'm not a statistician, so I'm not going to get into statistics about the benefits of immigration, though I have read reports about that. What I will tell you is, from an immigration law perspective, I mean, my background is I do a lot of business and family immigration, and in the past I've done what we would call, you know, deportation defense law stuff way back in an earlier part of my career. But I think the main thing is people are concerned about the illegal immigration population, and everyone seems to think that everybody becomes an illegal immigrant by sneaking over the border, all right? And I mean, you know, back in our days at Michigan State Law, you remember Detroit well, and I'm looking out the river right now. You know, there's no one swimming across right now, at least not in this weather, you know, and not that, with that current of the Detroit River. And the vast majority, in my opinion, I mean, you're never going to solve the problem if you don't understand how people become illegal, quote-unquote, in the United States. No, there aren't massive hordes of Mexicans coming into the United States. You know, that's actually not true. A lot of what I see in terms of illegal immigration are people who have overstayed their legal status and or have fallen out of status because they've reached a certain age, such as the age of 21, where they can't get immigration benefits. And most people say, well, you know what? Tough luck. They should have known when they expired. But, you know, usually sometimes the expiration date of when their status expires is a floating target. So you could be authorized to stay in the United States, say, October 1st, 2016, but because your passport expired April 2016 and you have in your mind that October 1st, 2016 date, you know, and your passport expiration limited your last, on your last trip, your ability to stay back in April, you're now here illegally, you know, and you got to see somebody like me to go figure out how to correct it, if you can even correct it. So that's the first thing I wanted to, the first misconception I wanted to make sure people understand is there are a lot of people who do play by the rules. It's just that unbeknownst to them, I mean, most people are not immigration experts, even the foreign nationals who come here, and they don't realize that an earlier expiration date on their passport or even their child who's aged out because they were not, you know, they reached the age of 21, or if they were an infant because their passport expired, say, earlier than mom and dad's passport expired earlier, that's how they can become an illegal alien, if you will. So I want to make sure that people understand that, because it seems whenever I say I do immigration law, people think I'm representing someone of Hispanic origin who snuck in from the southern border. And you know, we're in the northern border, and most people don't become illegal aliens that way.
Reggie Passis, he's a partner at Butzel Long, one of the most prestigious law firms in Detroit. He can see Canada from his house, certainly from his office. There's the Reggie I know.
Yep.
All right, brother, let's talk a little bit about what has been sort of sold or is what's being peddled in this campaign about folks that are here without documents, whether they're illegal aliens or they've overstayed a visa. Let's talk about these people in particular. And I want to take you back. I don't want this to be a quiz show, but 1986, Ronald Reagan was president, and he signed what was called the Simpson-Mazzoli Act, which gave instant sort of amnesty to a whole bunch of people who were here and contributing to society. No one is proposing something like that. But from Reggie Passis's position as an immigration lawyer, there are people who are here either with expired visas or have overstayed a student visa or had just never had documents in the beginning. What do people need to understand about the folks who are here, and what needs to be understood about the efficacy of getting them out, or what to do short of citizenship to have them here, as almost nearly all of them are, contributing quite well to this society and our economy?
Well, what you were talking about, the 1986, that's the amnesty bill under the Reagan administration. I mean, that's not what most immigration practitioners are really advocating for. Our immigration system right now is a sponsorship situation. You have to have the government sponsors you if you get political, if you're seeking political asylum. A family member sponsors you if you're marrying a U.S. citizen, or an employer is sponsoring you if you're coming in here to work legally for them because you've got some specific skill. So what has happened is, I'm going to fast forward your timetable a little bit to 1996, was that people were for the first time punished if they had any time in the U.S. without authorization. If you're in the U.S. without authorization for 180 days and you leave the country, you're barred from returning for 3 years. And if you're out of status for 365 days, so a year, and you leave the country, you're barred for 10 years. It used to be prior to that, that if they were sponsored in a legal way to come back into the United States, they would leave and come back in, and they would be reviewed by a consular officer outside the United States. What the 1996 law did was it punished people for being here illegally and prevented them from using that mechanism of going out and coming back in the right way. So what they've done is, if they've just continued to stay, which has resulted in the accumulation of the illegal immigration population, so I think the latest number is 11 million is what they're saying. So when you take that, and let's say I'm an immigration lawyer and I got an employer who says, this is a great guy, he's invented something, he's done something, or whatever, and I want to sponsor him for some immigration status and then maybe his green card later on, and he's here illegally or he's got some illegal immigration time in his history, that situation and these bars I talk about and other things prevent me from helping them get this employee legal status if they've been here long enough so that they're barred. Now, there are some instances where those time frames, 180 days, 365 days, we're still under the clock and we still can make it and do something. But most of the time, there's nothing we can do. So that's how I think the problem got exacerbated from this 1996 law. And I think really we ought to stick with a sponsorship type system, but we ought to have a mechanism that allows to account for people who can contribute, whether they're paying taxes or whether, you know, they're good members of society, they've invented something, they want to invest a certain, you know, several million dollars in a project, whatever, you know, that allows for this punitive bar of being outside the United States for, you know, some 3 years or 10 years from coming in. That's not an amnesty because you're asking them to still be reviewed. The main thing is we got to get these people in line to be reviewed and then let the immigration officers and judges do their job in terms of deciding if these people should stay or go based upon the law that they've been given. And you got to remember, Scott, too, our law is antiquated. I mean, we're talking about 1986, 1996. There was a big law change in 1990. And, you know, the world has changed a lot. I mean, even when you and I are in law school, I don't even think we had an email address. And now now most schools do it as a matter of course, give students email addresses. And our cell phones, I mean, they're hooked into Wi-Fi data leaking systems so we can check email. I mean, back then, we were on a modem and stuff like that. So, I mean, if you can imagine that was the technology back then, imagine what the business climate was. I mean, you have people – we're a global economy. I mean, you hear that term a lot. So you have a lot of travel in and out of the United States, travel back and forth. That's a lot of potential mistakes or mishaps that could happen with someone's immigration status every time they come in. So I think our immigration law has got to be updated to account for these changes in technology, changes in business practices, so that we can be, going forward, more competitive in the global marketplace for international talent.
Member of the American Immigration Lawyers Association and past Board of Governor member, Reggie Passis, my pal from law school. Okay, a couple more questions here because it's good education.
Sure.
You deal with the northern border. Detroit, the metropolitan Detroit area, has the largest population of people from the Middle East outside of the Middle East. And those people come from war-torn countries, Iraq. They come from Lebanon. They come from Syria. They've been coming for decades and without incident. That's how people got here, through the sponsorship program. Right. What are people missing about this idea of bringing Syrian refugees to the United States? And what can you tell people, as someone that works on the front lines in the largest community in the United States of Middle Eastern folks, about why they shouldn't worry about that, or if there are concerns, how to address them?
Well, I think what people are missing, Scott, is that, you know, whenever anybody applies for any kind of immigration benefit, whether that's political asylum, refugee status, or immigration status, they go through a pretty significant background check. I mean, they run not only your fingerprints, you know, they are also running every permutation of a version of your name through a database. There's even talk of them actually checking your LinkedIn, Facebook, social media profiles, all right, to see if there are any issues about people coming in. So it's pretty exhaustive, search of people's backgrounds who are coming in. And that happens on any immigration case. Now, these people who are coming in from Syria or any, you know, countries seeking asylum or refugee status, I mean, they're going through the same thing. They're coming, most of their homes have been destroyed. Most of their documents and stuff are not available. But I mean, a couple things don't change. A, the name that they give, and B, the fingerprinting. All right. That hits all the government's databases and things like that. And we've gotten a lot better, or at least our government's gotten a lot better about being able to check people's backgrounds. Now, is there still a chance that someone could come in who wants to cause harm to the country? Of course. You know, that's always a possibility. But the fact that they do background checks of this significant nature, it reduces that chance. I mean, the last couple of terrorists, you know, there are a couple of, you know, homegrown, you know, with this, the Oklahoma City bomber was a U.S. born, didn't go through any of these background checks.
The Orlando guy.
The Orlando guy.
Yeah, I mean, the guy in San Bernardino.
You know,
the Tsarnaev brothers,
We can go on and on.
Yeah.
I mean, criminals are going to do what they're going to do, period. And that's what these terrorists are. They're criminals. All right. But to say we should cut off everything just because of what a few criminals do, that's like saying, let's take away everybody's cars because there are a few that speed and get in accidents. You know,
yep.
We can't do that. I mean, we got to stay open. We got to remain that pillar of freedom that we are. And quite truthfully, what if the next person, I mean, sure, one person could say, well, what if the next person is the next Mohammed Atta? My response would be, what if the next person is the next Bill Gates? You know, we lose out on that opportunity. So you got to ask yourself, is it worth it? You know?
Outstanding. So, all right, one more. I got one more for you because I don't want to talk about that stupid wall. But
no,
I do want to talk about this claim that was made that somehow that ICE, the Immigration and Customs, is not currently attempting to deport people who have committed crimes. Can you address that in the context of sort of the potential roundup squads? Can you just sort of tell people procedurally if that's true and how ICE operates on deportation?
Well, okay, usually when people are convicted of a crime, well, when people are arrested of a crime, they're fingerprinted. Just like any person is arrested, they're also fingerprinted. That triggers a hit if they're a foreign national on the immigration ICE's system. All right, so they're aware of it, at least electronically. Sometimes they have people attend the court hearings sometimes too. And then what happens is as soon as their legal process at the state level is finished, ICE sends them a letter to appear before immigration court for what we call a hearing to start the process of determining whether they can stay or not in the United States. Now, for this claim regarding that ICE is not deporting criminal aliens or any illegal aliens for that matter, I think it's far-fetched. Many of my colleagues who practice removal defense or deportation defense are still going to court And I actually have, have a relationship with some of the immigration judges here. They're still working, all right? So they are still working on deporting people. I'm actually, the meeting that I'm going to after this is a meeting with the Immigration and Customs Enforcement here locally in Detroit, and we're going to hear about how they are continuing to do their job of finding people and removing people from the United States and how they're dealing with that. So that's still going on. That's like that type of claim is like saying that the border, the U.S. Customs and Border Protection people at the border are not letting people in anymore because they've, just decided to stop working. That's not happening.
All right,
ICE is still,
dude,
doing its job.
Reggie Passis, you are not just a genius lawyer. You're one of the great people I've met in my life. Will you come back on and do more of this? So that at least we can be educated about what is really going on and what the rules really are.
Scott, you are a good friend of mine, and anytime you call me, I will be there to answer the call. So, of course, I will.
All right, brother. Thank you.
Take care.
Congratulations to your Spartans.
Oh, thank you. Well, we're going to have a close one this year again, just like we always do.
Yes, I know. Right? Don't mention last year, please. There you go. One of the great people in the world, Reggie Passis, and a fine lawyer. Butzel Long, you can find Reggie Passis. Send him an email if you want to ask him more questions. PACIS@Butzel.com. We'll have him on another time.